Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Hello, I'm Charlotte Metcalf, and today I'm delighted to be in conversation with the actor, comedian and author Nigel Planer. Nigel is particularly famous for his defining role as Neil the Hippie in the cult 1980s sitcom The Young Ones, which also starred Rick Mayall, Adrian Edmondson and Alexei Sale. As I learned from Nigel's latest memoir, brilliantly entitled Young Once, A Life Less Heavy, being so well known for playing Neil has not always exactly been a blessing. In fact, after reading this hugely enjoyable book, I've discovered that you are a true polymath, Nigel, and have had a fascinating and varied career, as we're going to find out. Nigel Planer, a very warm welcome to Radio Oldie.
Hello, hello. The polymath. Yes, my dad would have hated that, but he said, "Oh, you're a dilettante." That's what it means. You're a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Well, I think we're going to find out that actually you're a master of rather a lot of them. So I absolutely love this book, especially because The Young Ones was so much part of my 20s. And I had the privilege of working with Aid and Rick Mayall in the 80s when I was making pop videos. So let's start at the beginning and go back to your father, because he was Austrian, wasn't he? And yes.
Yes, he was Austrian. He came here when he was 13, not speaking English. He got dropped by his brother, who was at school in Switzerland, and he just dropped at Charing Cross, get on that train, you're going off to boarding school. Very privileged position to be in 1933, going off to a boarding school. But not so nice if your brother's in Switzerland and your parents are in Paris, and you're on your own. My mother was a speech therapist. My grandparents, Arthur and Nancy.
But you were one of three, you were the middle one of two boys, is that right?
Two other boys, one either side.
Yeah. And he bought a nice big house in Twickenham somewhere.
It was actually in Mortlake.
Mortlake. Now belongs to David Candy or something.
Yes, we found this. I was brought up. He bought a house that he couldn't afford, and it made him quite bad tempered for some years in my memory of my childhood. It was a great big white house with a turret. It was an incredible house, incredible memory to have. It was a magic place that I used to dream about for years. And we buried a little tin of memorabilia in the 60s, way back. I must have been eight or something.
I think we all used to do that in the 60s. I did that too. I think it's still under my friend's house's floorboards in her past.
And then the new owners, we suddenly heard recently on Twitter, somebody got in touch and said, is this you? Are you the person in this? And it turned out it was David Gandy, the most handsome man in the universe.
Indeed.
And he got in touch and invited us around because they'd been doing some alterations to this house. And they dug up the bit where we'd buried this tin and they'd found it.
No.
Isn't that great?
No.
It's just fabulous. I used to resent the house, though, once I was a teenager because it was... You know, that's what... You bring mates back and they go, woohoo, look at this.
You live in a mansion.
You live in a mansion and that. And of course, my dad, you couldn't touch anything. It was, like, so precious to him, this house. But it was an amazing place to grow up. He took out a massive mortgage when he was just starting out to get this place. Mm. And it was his pride and joy, really, so, I mean...
But you went off in an opposite direction, didn't you? You went and lived in very scruffy places.
Yes.
And let's get on to the invention of Neil, then.
Yes, Neil. I mean, people always call him Neil from The Young Ones. Mm-hmm. But actually, he's got a much longer shelf life. He lived before and after The Young Ones. He first went on in a show. He was a crap folk singer. First went on a show that I did with my ex-double act partner, Peter Richardson, who created the comic strip and our club and our TV series, The Comic Strip Presents.
Yes, I hadn't realised until I read the book how close you were and how absolutely fundamental he was to everything that happened.
Oh, Peter, yeah, he's always called the guy who wasn't in the, you know, the fourth guy.
Yeah.
It's like he's not important, but that he's the sort of generator.
Yes, yes.
Of the whole movement, if you like.
And where did you meet him?
I met him at the first Pyramid Stage Glastonbury in 1971. Entrance was £1. You had to dig your own toilet. It wasn't like it is nowadays. A sort of
probably a lot more hygienic, actually.
BBC. It's a sort of BBC prom with no roof now, isn't it?
Yes.
Where all the BBC go along to glamp for a week's holiday and think they're being really cutting edge. It wasn't like that at all. It was a proper hippie festival. And Neil was born really out of Peter and my meeting. We wrote a show together called Rank, with about 30 characters in it that we played. And Neil was just a tiny interstitial between the bands, because we had bands. We wanted to be a theatre rock band. And his first appearance would have been 1975. I tried to stop it because I was embarrassed by it. And Peter said, no, look, just give it one try. We tried it in Plymouth, and it was the best bit in the show. It really worked. And then gradually accoutrements got added, such as long hair and loons.
Loons, we all had loons. Yeah. £1.99 they used to cost.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What colour were yours?
Well, I had many.
Oh, did you?
Purple.
Oh, purple maroon. Loons, come on. That's fantastic. When we did Neil in the Young Ones, finally, when we got there to the telly, 1980... I had to instruct really quite, in quite a detailed way, the exact look for Neil. I'm a bit of an obsessive on character accoutrements, you know, on the wigs, the hairline, everything has to be. I get very OCD on all of that.
Yes, I gathered that from the book. You're very into the detail. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the loons we had made and. The greatcoat, he had a big army greatcoat, which all my mates wore.
Yes,
those
indeed.
Army greatcoats.
Yeah.
And so Neil has that. He had also a pale blue velvet jacket. Because when you think of the, you know, people do a stereotypical picture of the hippie. It's got a headband and it sort of dresses like Jimi Hendrix, doesn't it, with a headband and an Afghan waistcoat and all that. But actually, wandering around in the late 60s, we didn't all look like... nobody would have dressed up that much. We had a T-shirt designed by my brother. You know all those universities, Stanford...
Yes, yes,
University,
yes.
All of that, yep. that kind of thing that was fashionable. And my younger brother designed one that looked like an American university, but I don't got to. Which is I don't go to university, and that's Neil's T-shirt.
That's so good.
I don't go to university because I dropped out of university. You were saying, where did Neil come from? I mean, I dropped out of university. I was studying.
You went to Sussex.
I went to Sussex for a year, and I was studying African and Asian studies, which was very groovy in those days to be doing that. I think they've closed that school now. And I dropped out of there, and then I went into the squat. I went on what's now called the Hippie Trail, or was then called the Hippie Trail, all the way across Asia, all the way across to India, all the way across Southeast Asia, all the way to the Hospital of Tropical Diseases in St Pancras, London, where I stayed for some months.
What did you have wrong with you?
This used to be... My first stand-up comedy routine, I used to just stand up and tell people all the symptoms. And they thought I was joking. I just used to stand up. This is sort of typical Neil authenticity, if you like. I used to just stand up and say, well, you know, I've got tropical sprue. And I used to do a routine about all the different kinds of diarrhea. Naming the different kinds of diarrhea, which your readers probably don't want to know what they were called. The Jackson Pollock, the soda siphon, etc. And then I went on to Giardia, which is known. People do know Giardia. I had Giardia. I mean, I weighed, oh dear, how much? I'm 6'3", and I now weigh 15 stone. I should probably weigh 14 stone, but 15 stone is sort of normal, and I weighed just under 8 stone.
Good Lord.
When I got back, I was not well. Because it was quite traumatic. I was away 6 months, and I was, you know, it was quite a traumatic experience, wandering around on your own with no money across Asia and back. And yeah. I went through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, down into India. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was character forming, I think.
And proper hippie trail. I mean, you really authentic, real thing.
It was, And it was, as I say, it was character forming because it was ghastly, but there were also wonderful, wonderful things.
So when you came back and after you emerged from the school of the tropical medicine,
yes.
At what point did you go to Lambda? And because you were in Avita, weren't you in the chorus line? Weren't you the understudy for Che Guevara?
I understudied Che Guevara, yeah. I put on a stone or two before I went to the hospital. Then I'm in the hospital, and then I got a job with a mate of mine painting and decorating. Running out of energy. I mean, we were all over roofs and things. We were doing outdoor stuff. And then while I was doing that, I thought, well, what have I ever done that anyone ever said well done? You know, I haven't been that what's the thing that really would fire me up? And it was going back into acting. I'd always done acting, and so I applied to some drama schools, and Lambda the first to offer me a place very quickly, and so I went there and I had a brilliant time.
So you went to Lambda, then you did Avita.
What happened then was this guy, Peter Richardson, who I'd met, in the holidays, we started writing a show from which Neil comes. And we put it on at the Roundhouse.
Is that Rank?
Yeah, it's called Rank. And I played some of the characters who later turn up in the comic strip. I played Paul, the Mandrax freak, who was based on a bloke I knew. Got any Mandy's, man? And all the various druggies that I know. There were a lot of druggy characters in it. And, druggy humour used to be okay, didn't it? I'm sort of dead against it now because...
Oh, you've got kids.
I've got kids, yeah. And I'm dead against drugs. You know, I don't like it anymore. I also think it's different from how it used to be because... If you think 1971, Glastonbury, the idea of turn on, tune in, drop out was kind of, it was a new age political act to start taking drugs. Everybody thought, we're going to have a new society, man, it's going to be great, and we're all going to be stoned. And so cannabis was sort of had this religious significance, this sort of resonance. It wasn't a sort of street drug. It was very middle class in a way, with a middle class revolution. Mm. We're all going to create a new society, and of course they all ended up running the country just like everybody else had done. All the previous generations of those, you know, the Richard Bransons and the people. They grew their hair a bit long, but trimmed at the front. It's a sort of the Richard Branson haircut. Trevor Nunn had the same haircut.
Yes,
didn't
he did. Yes,
they all had that sort of. And David Putnam had that haircut. Even Melvin Bragg at one point had that haircut. We're going to have this slightly over the collar haircut to show that we are groovy. We did go through the 60s, but we still run in the country. Thank you.
So where did you meet Aid and Rick?
Well, after Lambda, I did get my first equity card job. It was important to get an equity card.
Yes.
I was in the chorus of Avita, and while I was doing that, I was getting very bored. And the ads for the comedy store went up. So I'd fallen out a bit with Peter, but I rung him back and said, why don't we go and try our luck down there? And we went down there, and that's where we met Rick and Aid and Alexi. And that quickly became a team at the Comedy Store. And that's really the beginning of it all. The first night you see Rick doing his Vanessa poems. We call them the Vanessa poems. Theatre, what is theatre? I don't know. Ask Vanessa Redgrave, he used to say in these poems. And that just blew our minds.
Funny already. I get to see it.
When I take my spear to the theatre. Yeah, it was... He was just really excited. It was brilliant. And Alexei was brilliant. And we just thought, at last, there's a place where we can do stuff like this. And everybody else wants the same thing. And Peter was the mastermind, really, behind thinking, well, let's take the acts, you know, let's take Rick and Aid, Nige and me, Alexei Sale, and we'll take Arnold Brown as well. He was rather cool to have a much older than us Glaswegian accountant who was completely different, very abstract comedian. And let's just find another venue and make it like a show. And he found the venue. We found the Boulevard Theatre, which was in the Raymond Review Bar. And it was very funny to see the Islington audience and all the sort of time-outy audience having to go through the foyer,
yes,
of the Raymond Review Bar and up the stairs past all the photos. And at the beginning, he even had the Raymond Review Bar, even had the TV with the porn on. We had to ask him to stop that because that was too much. And so when we went on tour, Peter, you know, he was offered a promoter. He's very pig-headed, very stubborn, but he's, most of the time, he's right. He was offered, you know, do you want to do the university tour, the usual tour that the shows would do? And he said, no, we want some weird venues. And we were playing, like, porn cinemas and things like that. It was ghastly to do. I mean, one night, in, I think it was Glasgow, you think, oh, here's the venue, you arrive off the coach, and there's still steam coming off the seats. In the audience, like, it's horrible places. And he wasn't averse to art centres, but it did keep a brand. You know what I mean? He kept a sort of
scuzzy and edgy,
brand, which made it good. He's very good like that. And
the amazing thing is that television wanted it.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of people coming to the Comedy Store and to the comic strip. Peter went and got a contract for the Comic Strip Presents around the same time with Channel 4, which was just about to start. And so we were in competition with ourselves because the Young Ones was going out at the same time.
But it's so interesting, the Young Ones, because what do you think it was about that show that no one has ever forgotten it? And it didn't. It only had two runs, didn't it?
Yes, 12 episodes.
How do you explain, looking back, the success of it now?
It's a sort of confluence of causes. There was the exact vacuum waiting for it.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It was exactly there. Mm. And the combination, the chemistry, me, Rick, Aid, Alexei, and then the addition of Ben Elton to write that, to write those scripts. He was still at university when he was writing it.
Ben Elton.
Yeah.
And he sort of gave it that rage, didn't he? I mean,
he just came out of somewhere else, didn't he? I mean, it was really extraordinary. All those made-up swear words. Oh, you bottom burpy farty breath. You know, all of these.
I wonder if we'd find it funny now.
Well, I haven't seen it. I mean, I think some of it was absolute crap. I mean, some of those, it was just bonkers stuff. We're just doing meaningless things.
And shouting, a lot of shouting.
Yeah, I mean, they carried on. They were very shouty.
And you weren't, but they
were. I wasn't very shouty.
And
that does get on people's nerves, I think. I prefer, in the final analysis, I prefer things when you've got sadness and comedy in the same in the same moment. But
this was anarchy.
The young ones didn't often do that. Yeah. There is a moment in that last episode when they're on the bus and they're so full of optimism and the bus crashes and, you know they've come out of university with all these high hopes. And there's a little bit of sadness creeps in there. I quite like that episode. But not whimsy so much, but, I like...
Gentler.
Well, not gentler. You can hit harder emotionally, I think.
Mm.
Because stand-up comedy and that kind of comedy, it's great when you're in the fairground.
Yeah.
And then you walk away from it. It hasn't registered other than the anarchy. It's not registered. But you can have moments with a bit of sadness or a bit of drama in it that will stick with people. I mean, that's what I discovered because I'm a poet and I used to go on tour with Henry Normal, who's the... I still do go on tour with him, who's a comedy writer, producer, but he's also a poet. And the first gig I did with him was right in the middle of the comedy era. And I said, I've got this routine I can do. I go out, I do this, and I get a pull. And he said, you don't need to do that. Just go out and say who you are, tell the truth. And I found, oh, look, they're still laughing. I'm getting just as many laughs. And I thought, oh, this beats stand-up any day.
But you went on to do really serious things. I mean, you've won awards for your music. You know, you had a hit, didn't you? With
yes, I have actually. Haven't I?
Yeah, you have
I
indeed. Come on, Nigel.
I won a Brit.
You
Hole in My Shoe.
Hole in My Shoe. Hole in My Shoe.
Best comedy record of 1984 or whenever it was, and I think they then stopped the category after that. So you could say that I was the reigning champion.
Yeah.
Because they'd never done that again.
Yeah.
But
you've done that, and you became a very serious, you did masses of acting, and you became a brilliant voiceover artist, doing Pratchett's
book. Oh, yes, I did the first, God knows how many, 20 or so Terry Pratchett books with all the hundreds of voices. I love that.
Mm.
Used to have a little cast list that I'd written with all the how to do this voice, how to do, because, they keep coming at you, 30, 40 characters a book, and you think, how did I do this one? And so I had a little crib sheet saying, Jeremy Irons with a lisp and a stutter or something, so that you'd go back to that and think, oh, yes, I remember. Hello, do the voice, whatever it was. But I loved doing that.
Magic Roundabout, you did?
I did 105 episodes of the Magic Roundabout. I wrote and with some writing assistants, or, some of them were written with my brother, Rog.
I think you said something really interesting in your book about the Magic Roundabout, is that it didn't translate for second abroad. It just wasn't the same.
Well, if I said that, it was very clever of me. But, I think it's more that it was originally a French product. It's Le Manège Enchanté. And they're all very manic characters. Lots of different actors playing them. And they're talking like that. And when they gave it to Eric Thompson to do the English version, like me, he got the literal translations, looked at it and thought, bollocks. Do that. Put it on the telly, turned the volume down, and he made up the beautiful deadpan.
It's a deadpanness, you're so right, yeah. It's
quiet, yeah. And you've got all this manic activity from puppets.
Yeah.
And then she just says, I don't think so, said Florence. And it's so beautifully English in that way. It's very, very English like that with Eric Thompson. I just tried to... he died in 1986 or something, and so there were some episodes he hadn't done. So I got the privilege, what a joyful thing to be past these episodes and say, well, will you finish the job off?
Can we just talk a bit about your personal life? Because one of the things about this book, it is actually a love story to Roberta, really, at the end of the day.
Yes, it's quite embarrassing to realise at the end of the day that your life comes out like a Richard Curtis movie.
It really does.
It's really embarrassing. But the story is she was my landlady. I rented a room off her in 1978.
Bridge Road or somewhere like that.
Wandsworth Bridge Road.
Yeah.
And there was her. She's a fair bit older than me. Mm. And I helped bring up her adolescent children. I lived with her as a partner for nearly 10 years. And then we separated.
And then you went married twice.
Yes, I had two marriages, two sons, two divorces, two sets of solicitors, two cars, two houses, all gone. Kept the sons, though. That's one thing. And 25 years ago, we got back together again. We never really lost touch. We were always in touch. And
that really was a Richard Curtis moment, though, which you described in the book. You suddenly went, oh, my goodness.
Why couldn't I see what has been in front of my eyes all these years? Yeah, I mean, it is very Richard Curtis. He'd be proud of me, I think. And we got married about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And so she's my current wife. She hates me saying that.
Yeah, I guess that does suggest. She's your everlasting wife.
That's
she'd
right.
like you to say.
And I'm about to do my talk for the oldie, and they're going to get surprised. They didn't realise they'd bought a ticket to come and see a 73-year-old toy boy. But
how much older is she than you?
She's 13 years old. Mm. It used to be embarrassing. People, I'd think, oh, I'm going out with this older woman, which was a bit weird, you know, saying this woman's older than me. And then sort of midlife, it's like when people are above you at school or below you at school, it kind of evens out, doesn't it? As you, I was in the year below
it
you.
It takes a long time to even out there, doesn't it? You never forget where they were, above you or below you at school.
Although it's gone even further than that nowadays with me and her. And people now think I'm older than her when we turn up at places.
And that's
because
hilarious.
I've done ageing much faster than she has. I've really, because I've caned it. I have smoked, I have drunk. Led a more dissolute life. That she's never smoked, never drunk.
Is she not? No. She doesn't drink at all?
Well, not she have a drink, but she's just not that way inclined.
Oh, I wish I wasn't.
I've long ago paced her, not just caught up with her, but I'm the stoopy one now.
You are 6'3", you're allowed to stoop.
Yeah, okay.
And actually, you're not stooped at all. But if you did stoop, you'd be allowed to at 6'3".
Yeah. I mean, the test of it, though, isn't it? When you're both in the sofa and you get up and you go,
that's terrible. You've got to stop making those noises.
No, that's me. And she just goes, I haven't done a thing. Gets up and off she goes.
She doesn't make those
noises. No, she doesn't make those noises.
That's enviable. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she's.
I can't believe that.
She is. I mean, that's what I say. It is a rom com.
That's very funny.
Because she's an unbelievable woman. Yeah.
So you've written this book, which is marvellous.
Thank you very much.
No, it's really, really I really, really enjoyed it. And what next? Because you've also written novels, haven't you?
I've written three novels.
Yeah.
I'm just starting work on a novel. I've got another memoir. It's sort of I've got lots and lots of words, but they're not in the right order. As
that happens as we get older.
As Eric Morcombe said, I mean, it doesn't have a concept yet, but I do have. I've kept diaries and notes, and this one I suppose would be more about other people because.
You've met everybody, I must say.
I've
that's
met
another
a
thing.
Lot of people.
You've met everybody.
But not just the big knobs. The thing that I find fascinating, I go back and look at my notebooks. I used to be a travel writer as well. And I just write down what people actually said. I've got a new volume of poetry coming out this year called Travelling Light, which is just all over the world. It's all the people I talked to at TICS. So a second volume would be more about other people than me, I hope. And I hope a publisher would like that. I did have a book called Jeremiah Born in Time, a time travel book, with Unbound. And they just went bust. And then they got taken over by Boundless, who went bust. And it's been a horrible nightmare. And they just picked that book up by a new publisher called... He's been at it for years, but a new house called Wilson Square. So that book's now available again, and I'm terribly chuffed about that. I'm hoping to do a second one of them. So, yeah, I've got loads of books. I mean, I spent a while being a playwright and getting plays on, and it's so difficult getting them on. And I've had a musical. I was a very old friend of Faye Weldon before she died, and with friends we wrote a version. We modernised it into the modern age, with all social media and everything, of She Devil, and we did a. It's sitting there. Waiting
that
for somebody.
Would be wonderful. It's,
and the songs by Hannah Jane Fox are just brilliant. And we've made it very different. We've made it more of a sort of Faustian story.
More of a pact.
She does go to hell, and she does have to sign in blood with the plastic surgeon, who is the devil. So we've made it sort of more theatrical, and it works now. It actually is a functioning show. But, who's going to...
People love musicals now.
It's very dark, though. People like... At the moment, they like that kind of good time, everything's easy, really, kind of shows. And this one's pretty dark. It's very funny, but it is a dark story. I've got a sort of bottom drawer of what Ben Elton calls broken crockery, which is the stuff you've written that didn't get put on,
Well, that's great. It means there's lots... And lots more from you to come.
Clear the space. That's the difficulty.
Well, we look forward to hearing what you're going to do next.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for coming on Radio Oldie with me. It's been an absolute joy and very funny. Thank you, Nigel.
Marvellous.
You've been listening to me, Charlotte Metcalf, in conversation with Nigel Planer. If you've enjoyed listening to us, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk, where you'll be able to hear more like this. In the meantime, my very warm thanks to you again, Nigel, to Bailey Gifford for sponsoring us, and to you for listening. Goodbye. You've been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.